And we're back. Hey, how's it going? Did you think that I wasn't going to try and get this thing back up on the road? Well, I am. I'm here. You know, one man running the show. Sometimes things are going to happen. You know what just happened? The whole browser just crashed. My software just crashed. Everything was just kaput. Just decided to shut down. It's like, oh, okay. Well, there goes the show. You know, it's like when you're producing a television show, which I've done before. I was a producer at Fox. I'll tell you, things sometimes go wrong. But when you're Fox News, you've got a million different backup plans, all kinds of different things. You don't have to worry that one piece of software is going to shut down and then boom, your show's over. So when one thing happens here, that's it. One computer running the show, one piece of software running the show. One day maybe we'll be as big as others, but there it is. Technical difficulties. We have them. We has them. But we're back. All right. You didn't even get to see the clips from Joe Biden, did you? Well, I've got them, and now I think things are working. So let's head over to our, hopefully this won't crash it again. Here we go. Let's head over to our Twitter weirdness scene and take a listen to President Joe Biden's lovely speech. It wasn't divisive in any way, shape, or form.
American democracy is under attack because the defeated former president of the United States refuses to accept the results of the 2020 election. He refuses to accept the will of the people. He refuses to accept the fact that he lost. He has abused his power and put the loyalty to himself before loyalty to the Constitution. And he's made a big lie, an article of faith in the MAGA Republican Party.
Jeez, this guy is obsessed, absolutely obsessed with his opponents. And that's how you know that the Democrats are in trouble. Here, let's start over with this clip from Hannity last night. Take a listen to this.
Once again, Joey delivered another kind of bizarre, out-of-touch speech about his hatred, his full-on hatred for half the country. Take a look.
Now, extreme MAGA Republicans aim to question not only the legitimacy of past elections, but elections being held now and into the future. This is the struggle we're now in. A struggle for democracy. A struggle for decency and dignity. A struggle for prosperity and progress. A struggle for the very soul of America itself.
See, what's interesting about this whole, like, democracy thing. Now, those arguments like, oh, we're democracy's in danger and stuff, they don't work on people like yourself and myself. Conservatives, libertarians, right-wingers, anybody to the right of Joseph Stalin, you know, you're going to have a vague notion of democracy, but it's not the kind of thing that's going to make you go to the polls. Like, oh, my God, democracy's under threat. I got to go vote because democracy's under threat. Right? That's not the kind of thing that motivates you to the polls, most likely. But I'll tell you, yesterday, the topic of the show was, you know, the suburban white women have shifted heavily towards voting for Republicans because of economic issues. But I'll tell you that in the top three issues that were driving suburban white women voters, women voters to the polls, the third issue that was driving them to the polls was democracy, just democracy itself. I mean, can you imagine going to the polls and voting for democracy? I mean, I don't know. I guess it motivates some people, but certainly not me. I've got one more clip here for you from the president. Take a listen. Oh, wait. So when they were talking about future elections being stolen, this is kind of what the Democrats are going for now. This is like the new sort of talking point. And you know this because take a listen to Hillary Clinton the other day.
I'm here to highlight something that is keeping me up at night. And I know this group really understands what I'm about to say. I know we're all focused on the 2022 midterm elections, and they are incredibly important.
Right.
But we also have to look ahead. Because you know what? Our opponents certainly are.
Right.
Right-wing extremists already have a plan to literally steal the next presidential election.
Oh my God.
And they're not making a secret.
And like, let's put aside the whole fact that if I said something like that here, this stream would get taken down. Maybe that's what happened earlier, but man, this stream would get taken down so fast. You have no idea, but they're already preparing themselves to say, oh, that the election is going to be stolen in the future by Republicans. I mean, the hypocrisy is off the charts. It's totally off the charts. Yikes. All right. We're going to go to a commercial break. All right. Sorry about the technical difficulties earlier. I do have a contingency plan in place, though, because we are back. Coming up next at 7:22, the surveillance site. Oh, no. I missed the big story. Gosh, I'm so screwed up by this technical error. I'm so sorry, guys. I'm going to get on the ball here. Coming up next, Senator Rand Paul might be ready to wreak vengeance. Oh, yes. This article from the Washington Post. Senator Rand Paul says that the United States botched COVID. He could soon lead probes of it. The Kentucky Republican is in line to chair the Senate health panel if the GOP wins. Oh, baby girl. Things are going to get exciting around here. We need a red wave. Oh, dear Lord, we need a red wave. Free at last. Free at last. Great God Almighty will be free at last. On the Wake Up America Show at wakeupamericashow.com. And we're back. Good morning. Hello, everybody. Nice to see you. Albert Krockenfels, our buddy Kenneth Slayer over there in the live stream. Glad to have you over there. You can also text the show this morning at 573-319-1586. We love to hear from our listeners over text. It's a lot easier for me to read your comments that way because when it scrolls by on the live chat, sometimes I miss them. So if you definitely want to have something read into the show or hear, or send, maybe you want to send me your opinion anonymously, you can do so at 573-319-1586. Love to hear from you. One of our listeners texted in this morning and said, "Hi, AP, there's an issue that came to my attention. Might be interesting to talk about. No one else is talking about it. Federal agencies are continuing to deny people employment on the basis of convictions for simple possession of marijuana, despite the president declaring this is a needless barrier to employment." That is a good conversation. I'll have to think about that one. Sometimes I got to think before I speak, but that's a great text. You can send me one too. Again, 573-319-1586. All right, let's get to the goods. This is some juicy stuff. I'm so excited. Hooray! The Kentucky Senator Rand Paul has the election years. This is from the Washington Post. I saw this last night. I was just so excited to share it with you. Biden administration officials are dreading three words. Chairman Rand Paul. What? Now, why is that so scary? Because the Kentucky senator, of course, has famously clashed with Anthony Fauci and other health officials throughout the pandemic. He's in line to lead a Senate committee if he wins re-election and Republicans take the chamber next week. Now, I know what you're thinking. Kentucky, he's going to win. Of course, he's going to win re-election. Question is, will the Republicans take the Senate? And to me now, this is more of a reason to get out and vote than ever. And when I say vote Republican, bitches. I know my libertarian friends are like, I've got so many people sending me DMs for the last few days asking me for where they can find information on the political positions of their local judges. And I'm like, dude, like, you think that I know what the political positions of the judges of Cass County are? I'm like, come on. Like, I barely know the political positions of the judges here in Cole County, except for like Judge Brian Stumpy and Judge Cotton Walker, which I actually do know their political positions. But hey, man, I can't know all the political positions of all the people in your county. You guys got to do some homework before these elections. Come on. Voting Republican. Yeah, so when people hit me up and then like somebody hit me up last night and was like, is there any reason to vote Libertarian on the ballot this fall? And I know my libertarian friends are not going to be happy about this. And Camelia Peterson and I are going to talk about this again later on the show. But I don't think there's a good reason to vote for libertarians this fall. Now, if you've got a particularly terrible Republican, maybe there's a good argument. Or a particularly amazing libertarian candidate on the ballot, you know, that's going to give you ballot access or 6 or 7 or 10 or 12% or something, then perhaps there is an argument for it. Your situation, your results may vary, as they say. But quite frankly, I think that the harder the message we send, especially in the Senate, especially with the chance to take the Senate, the harder with the message we send to Democrats on this, the better we're going to look after the elections if we take the Senate. Now, I know that that's a bit of a toss up here because, you know, Paul's obviously he's heavily favored in his own race, but the Senate is viewed as kind of a toss up by pollsters. Republican control would give, this is what the Washington Post says, Republican control would give the libertarian doctor, small L libertarian, thank you for getting that right, Washington Post, the power to lead investigations and help to set legislative priorities next year, either as chairman of the Senate sweeping health committee or its more targeted government oversight panel.
Oh. Perfect.
Yes. You love it. You love to see it. Oh, this would be exciting. Oh, yeah. Senator Paul sent out a fundraising email in October that said, if you help me win, I promise to subpoena every last document of Dr. Fauci's unprecedented cover-up. And this is, again, from his email, this is referring to Paul's allegations that Fauci contributed to the virus's creation by funding research in Wuhan, China, allegations that Fauci has categorically denied. Oh, yeah. Damn, this is good stuff. I mean, this makes you want to dance, baby girl. Oh, God. Oh, man, this has put me in such a good mood. Now, Dr. Paul, of course, is an ophthalmologist, right? He's a doctor. He's set to be the most senior Republican on the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee, better known as HELP, which oversees the nation's health and education agencies as part of its expansive portfolio. Now, this possibility has, like, got people rattled over there on Capitol Hill, and it's worrying these trade groups because he's, you know, they're worried that he's going to follow through on this criticisms that he's made of big pharma and the medical establishment and, quote, public health officials. Oh, my God. Are we excited? If you're excited and you want this to happen, you know how you can help this happen? You need to like this page. If you're over on YouTube, you need to like the stream and you need to share it with your timeline, because honestly, you know, you got to show the love. You got to show the love. Send us a text at 573-319-1586. How you feel about this possibility? Are you going to vote for Republicans for Senate? Love to hear for it. I've got a good Senate candidate to vote for here in the state of Missouri. Now, your results may vary. I'm voting for Eric Schmidt, our attorney general, who did a terrific job fighting the pandemic. Because to me, the pandemic, how you acted during the pandemic was the litmus test, right? These 2022 midterm elections, to me, the litmus test for how I'm voting is based on how they behaved during the pandemic. Were they for mandatory masks? Were they for mandatory vaccinations? Were they for shutting down schools? You know, were they for shutting down businesses, right? To me, if they were for any of that stuff, automatic disqualification. And even such that if it was a Republican that's particularly bad, except for maybe the Senate that was particularly bad on the pandemic, and you got a Libertarian in the race, it might be even worth voting for the Libertarian in that situation. Now, the American Public Health Association, they're a trade group, you know, these crony groups, they gave Paul the lowest possible grade on their congressional report card. 0%, said George Benjamin. He says he has not been an exemplar of prevention or wellness. He's referring to Paul's reticence about whether he got a coronavirus vaccine, and reports that he used the Senate gym while waiting for a coronavirus result in 2020 that showed he was infected. Quote, George Benjamin says, that is a real problem when you're a physician. You should know better. Okay. And then, of course, there's other health experts that the Washington Post is trotting out to try and be like, you know, oh, he's just, Rand Paul is terrible. But this shows you, this is what's at stake. Have you already voted in your elections? If so, who'd you vote for? Did you vote for Republicans? Are we going to see a red wave? What do you think? Send us a text, 573-319-1586. That's 573-319-1586. Love to hear your thoughts on this one. I'll check the live stream chat before we get back on the Wake Up America show. I'm so excited. Coming up next, Liberty Laura to talk about how far her heroes have fallen. Yeah, that woman who wrote the piece in The Atlantic calling for pandemic amnesty. Laura used to be a big hero of hers. You either die the hero, or you live long enough to see yourself become a victim of hatred by the right on the Wake Up America show at wakeupamericashow.com. Good morning, Rise and Freedom. Happy Thursday. Thanks so much for tuning in and watching and listening to the Wake Up America Show with Austin Peterson at wakeupamericashow.com. Well, if you're like me and you've gotten out there in the world and you've had an opportunity to meet your heroes, well, you probably know that they can often disappoint you. You know, I've had the blessing to be able to even work with many of my heroes, and many of them have exceeded my expectations. But to be honest, most of the heroes that I've met in my life have convinced me that, you know, it's probably not wise to have heroes. Heroes really aren't a thing. Maybe I just need to be my own hero. You can be my hero, baby. Well, my next guest says that her hero has fallen most of all this week. a writer in The Atlantic, wrote a piece calling for a general pandemic amnesty. Emily Oster. I thought she was just some psycho left-wing liberal who was saying all kinds of crazy stuff during the pandemic, but it turns out she actually has some expertise in a related field. Let's talk to Liberty Laura, who's joining us now live and on camera. Good morning, Laura. Thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Hi, Austin.
Hey, thanks so much
for having me.
Yeah,
I feel bad for Emily Oster.
Wait a minute. The woman who wants to call for pandemic amnesty after she was talking about all these horrible things that should happen to anti-vaxxers, you feel bad for her?
I agree to all of those points. Well, as you and I were talking about, I feel bad for her in the right that she has no idea what was coming for her, which is what we'll talk about. But I was a fangirl. I got pregnant with my first son in 2019. And, you know, I had some women in my life to talk to, but I really felt like I was like alone. Like I had no idea what was going on. And there's so many things that you've heard about your whole life growing up about pregnancy and about childbirth. And they say, you know, be careful what medicines you take, be careful what foods you eat, be careful what you do while you're pregnant. You can't fly at a certain point. And there's all of these things and you want to protect your baby and you want to protect yourself, but you also feel like you're going to vomit all the time. And so you need some resources to help you feel better emotionally and physically. And so Emily Oster has a series of books. She's an economist at Brown University and she's also a mom. And so she wrote a series of books breaking down these pregnancy and parenting myths by using data and statistical analysis and really lays it all out there in a beautifully well done series of books. And her first book is called Expecting Better. It was her top performing book out of the three. And that's the one I read. And it's about, you know, can you eat raw sushi while you're pregnant? And basically the answer is yes, the risk is low. Can you eat deli meat while you're pregnant? Basically the answer is if you choose to take that risk, the risk is low.
There's a risk of eating deli meat when you're pregnant.
All of these things you didn't know, right? You didn't know, but now you do. And when you're pregnant and you become a mom, your amygdala, the fear center in your brain, grows. And so you need data like this to be able to operate. Also, Austin, Mexican shredded cheese. There's like a Listeria risk with shredded. All of these facts are in my stuff in my already busy brain now.
All right. So she was a hero of yours because you were reading her books about pregnancy and there was all this really good information in there. So you kind of idolized her and then the pandemic happens.
Yes. Yeah. So I had followed her since 2019. I had followed her on Instagram and read some of her newsletter content. And then the pandemic happened and it happened slow, right? I think it was a slow burn for most people. And I was watching the content she posts and she does this regular thing that she's known for where she does Q&As on her Instagram during her 6 a.m. morning run. And I was watching these Q&As and, you know, 2020 happened and we were all pretty scared, and at least at the first part of 2020. And I remember I was one of those people that was like washing my groceries when we came home, you know, in April and May. And, but then that year happened in 2021 and most people we knew had COVID. I was pregnant at that point. So I said, I'm not going to get a new vaccine while I'm pregnant. And I was watching these Q&A questions and they started to dramatically change from how I was thinking about things. And they started to say like, well, we've kept our kids away from their grandparents for a year and a half now. Should we keep going at it? They refuse to wear a mask outside with us. And I'm like, well, you don't need to wear a mask outside. All of the data says that the transmission outdoors just doesn't happen. Emily, you must respond to this with the facts, right? And she never did. And that happened all through 2021. And then these parents were like, can I booster my 6 month old? And I said, these women are different than me. We do not think alike. Mm-hmm. And instead of responding with like, hey, the data actually shows that your healthy 6 month old didn't need the original shot and probably definitely doesn't need a booster. She really took this nonchalant approach and was just like, it's whatever you want to do, which was completely fundamentally different than how she had her claim to fame.
So she used to, when you're reading her books and she was talking about pregnancy and things like that, she was an expert on, she was providing real data and real research. But when it came to vaccination, yes, and, you know, just a devil's advocate thing, you know, she, like a lot of people, kind of have to rely on people who are actual experts in that field to say, oh, we're going to do that. But she didn't even provide data from those experts, is what you're saying?
Now, she would say kids are low risk. She would say kids in this category are extremely low risk for hospitalization and definitely death. But go ahead and do whatever you want. Now, of course, parents should parent how they choose. But I was reacting to this content much differently than her. I have a handful of mom friends who also watch her. And we were texting each other during this time. And we're like, what's happened to Emily Oster? She's kind of lost her level-headed approach. And there's this tweet that's going around now of hers. And I believe it's from 2021. And she was advocating for people to lose their jobs if they didn't get vaccinated. She said, shaming people who won't get vaccinated will never work, but we should definitely force them to get vaccinated if they want to do things that they enjoy, such as work, air travel, et cetera. And so she tried to take this middle ground stance. And that's when I said, I feel bad for her. She kind of got lost in like the balkanization that's happening. She tried so hard to safeguard her like moderate position on things. And I see a number of friends and family around me doing this. They try and safeguard, they try and be moderate. They try and stay in the middle. But the problem is that there is no middle because we all believe in different facts and different truths anymore. And so she got lost and no one likes her because the left attacked her, if you'll remember, for advocating for opening schools in the fall of 2021. And now the right hates her for saying, please forgive us for every time we were wrong and shamed you for it.
Man, this is good stuff. If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking to Laura Linkton. We're talking about the author, Emily Oster, who Laura idolized for some time, really looked up to for her pregnancy information, and who really had a fall from grace during the pandemic. She was the author of the piece in The Atlantic, who was talking about why we need to have a pandemic amnesty. Now, you know, on the good side of things, you know, she can't win. Obviously, she's in a scenario where everybody hates her. But I mean, she does admit that she was wrong about schools. At least the left is coming out admitting it. The fact that, and this is what I've been saying, and you know, not a lot of Republicans or right wingers are agreeing with me necessarily, but I've been saying that the fact that the left and the people on the left are calling for this shows that at least they're admitting that they made a mistake and that there were wrongs. And the whole school, the educational thing, a lot of people are going to dig themselves in. And I think I actually have a quote from Emily Oster here where she says, the people who got it right for whatever reason may want to gloat. Yes, we do, of course. And then she says, those who got it wrong for whatever reason may feel defensive and retrench into a position that doesn't accord with the facts, meaning that the people who, you know, advocated for keeping schools closed are going to say, oh, well, it was the right thing, or they're going to still believe that what they did was the right thing. So, I mean, you know, it's going to be difficult for us to kind of figure out a way out of this that doesn't, you know, just basically put us back to where square one, right? Where people are blinded on one, you know, blinded on both sides, really, right?
Yes, and I agree. And that's the problem. And it's specifically, her piece is titled Political Amnesty. And if we look back at what does that word evoke in your mind, the word amnesty, usually people associate it with immigration, right? And so the last time we granted wide scale amnesty was Ronald Reagan in regards to immigration in the 1980s. What happened after that? However you feel about immigration, whether you're open, closed border, whatever, what we did not do when we granted amnesty was fix our systemic immigration problems. And those persisted. If we just grant amnesty after the pandemic, the people in charge who made the mistakes that were in a position to know better will continue. Those problems will persist. The way that they abused and neglected their power will continue. We cannot grant amnesty. We have to fix the problem.
Yeah. See, my wife and I were talking about the other day about this story about like a 91-year-old concentration camp guard, right, from World War II. And he was 17 years old at the time, but he was in the guard tower and he got convicted and he died in jail. I think he spent 2 months in jail before he died. And so we were kind of talking about this. We're like, you know, should we really be going back and prosecuting people who, you know, worked at these camps when they were 17? And you know, we kind of got caught up in like this question about, okay, well, what if he was drafted and he was forced to do there? Is that different than if he signed up and did it? But, you know, at the end of the day, he was a member of the SS, which, you know, you don't volunteer to be an SS member. You have to join that crew. But, you know, it's kind of along those same lines. Is like, you know, we don't, if there is a Nuremberg 2.0, as people are calling for on Twitter, then, you know, not everybody is Hermann Göring, right? Not everybody, you know, is going to get hanged at the end. Not everybody's, you know, Heinz Guderian, or, you know, the not everybody is, you know, a top Nazi that needs to go and hang. But some do, Laura. Some there are some people who committed great crimes against humanity. I mean, it wasn't as bad as China, where they were like, you know, locking us up and like sealing our doors and things like that. But there were some terrible crimes that were committed, you know, that like, you know, there are people who are responsible. And, you know, the hope is that if the Senate is taken over by Republicans, Senator Rand Paul might become the head of the Health Committee, which would mean that he could have the power to do, yes, you know, commissions. And I mean, you know, these midterm elections are important as a reckoning in my mind. Wouldn't you agree?
Fauci will be very busy during his retirement, yeah, if that is the case. So I was talking about consequences of what happened during the pandemic when another friend of mine pointed out, when I was reading Emily Oster's piece, the most severe consequence for Emily and her family during that time was that her family had to wear masks during a hike. But to bring it back to her specialty, I had a friend who was pregnant with twins working in healthcare who was forced to get a vaccine to keep her job and maternity leave. And she didn't want to. And so she, in her mind, had to endanger the health of herself and her kids for the sake of her job. The pandemic put people, not the pandemic, politicians' reactions to the pandemic put people in those kind of positions. People were out of work. People had to had their health autonomy violated. Women had to go into ultrasound appointments to discover that they had a miscarriage and lost their baby without their husband there. I mean, these were severe consequences that happened because of the reactions of politicians who were in a position to know better. And so for some people, it's going to be really hard to get amnesty or forgiveness.
Maybe we do believe in reparations. Reparations must be paid. Liberty, Laura, you're always a great guest, and we appreciate your time on the show. Thanks for coming on and talking about your heroes that have fallen, this Emily Oster character. Tell us how people can find out more about your work. I know you've got I think it's a weekly newsletter that you write. It's a really great newsletter. You want to share that with our listeners?
Yeah. So when I was pregnant in 2019, I was working in Congress. I was working in the House of Representatives as a communications director. And after all of COVID happened, I quit that job and now run my own political news aggregation service. It comes out 3 times a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday mornings. What I do as using my experience as a communications director is I go through everything online and pull the best of the best and a lot of underreported political news stories that you might not see through the mainstream media. That way you don't have to spend hours on Fox News and Reddit and Twitter and subjecting yourself to all that online violence. And instead you can get a succinct summarized news brief for you 3 times a week. And you can sign up at billbrief.com. My newsletter is called Bill Brief. I'm also on Instagram and TikTok, of course, with the CCP at Laura from Kansas.
And she sometimes moonlights in making some awesome products for the AP for Liberty shop. Laura, thank you very much for your time and for your service in the cause of freedom. Thank you. Thank you very much. All right. Did you like Liberty, Laura? Send us a text, 573-319-1586. We certainly appreciate her giving her time. Very valuable. She is a mother to two toddlers, very young kids. So the fact that she gets on here and helps us out, gives us her time and her energy, we're certainly grateful for. Send her a thank you. Check out our website, billbrief.com. And what are we talking about next? What do we have for him, Johnny? What do we have for him, AP? Surveillance society. Oh yeah, everybody's got Zoom cameras everywhere, right? And this author talked about this as a problem, right? The surveillance society. You know, I love my Zoom camera. I don't know about you. We'll talk about that. Don't forget, Camelia Peterson's going to join us at 8 o'clock to talk about libertarians who drop out of their races to support Republicans. That's going to be 8:05-ish on the Wake Up America Show at wakeupamericashow.com. Good morning. It's 7:53. You're watching and listening to the Wake Up America Show with Austin Peterson at wakeupamericashow.com. Did you like that interview with Liberty Laura? She's been a friend and an ally for a very long time. I guess her son was listening to the radio. She said, Dawson, listen to Mama on the radio. Well, I'm glad to hear that. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Wake Up America show. We're so thankful to have our listeners here. I saw this story. It really caught my eye yesterday. Do you have a surveillance camera at your house? My wife and I, we love our Ring doorbell cameras because it lets us know when a package comes to the house. Sometimes we do get shady people that walk around, come in from the neighborhood, and like, we'll walk up to our like front door, and you know, sometimes like, you know, dogs will walk up on our front door and stuff like that. We like to know what's going on around our house, especially if we're out for dinner or something like that. You know, we just like to know what's going on. And, you know, we don't think about it because, you know, even though we're libertarians and we like our privacy, you know, it's the kind of thing that, you know, we like to know. We also like our security as well, right? There's a good argument to be made for, you know, having these kinds of things for security. And also just secretly, I'm kind of addicted to these. I'll give you a little tip. There's a really great YouTube channel called Doorbell News. And it's like, it's great. It's all just Ring doorbell cameras, like the mayhem, the nonsense, the weird people who show up at like, you know, 3 a.m. on people's front porch and what they do and see. I saw some guy like lay down on somebody's front porch and like charge their cell phone and like take a nap. It was the weirdest thing ever. So, but anyways, I really love it. And it's connected to this neighborhood app as well, which is kind of like a way for people to who are in certain neighborhoods to be able to share information about what's going on in their neighborhood. So when I saw this article yesterday, it caught my attention. America's Ring doorbell camera obsession highlights the scourge of mass surveillance. And then when you say mass surveillance, you know, libertarians are going to be triggered, like, you know.
No, God!
Right,
no, God, please!
Right, not big fans of that, the mass surveillance. But when I think of mass surveillance, I think of mass government surveillance. I don't think about, you know, people with their Ring doorbell cameras at their front door, right? But here's what this author says. He says, why plastering cheap internet-connected surveillance cameras on everything we own isn't fun or funny, and it makes everyone less safe. So you got my attention. Okay, interesting. And the author tells this story about how in October, a man walked down his Florida street to return a neighbor's package that had been accidentally delivered to his address. But unbeknownst to this guy, he was being watched by an Amazon Ring doorbell camera on the front porch. Now, police said that the Ring device sent an alert to the homeowner, and his teenage son, who assumed that there was an intruder, grabbed one of his 45 caliber handguns and opened fire on a woman. Not the package returner, this woman who was sitting in her car. She wasn't hurt, but it was a close call. And he fired 7 rounds through a child's car seat and lodged themselves in her seat back. You know, if the car seat hadn't been empty, you know, a child would have probably been killed. But, you know, people who are fans of these Ring doorbells and, you know, the proliferation of them say that this act of violence had nothing to do with Ring and other network doorbell cameras, you know. And this is NBC writing, by the way, far left NBC reporting this. So that's why this language, not these are not my words. This is NBC. They'll blame the neighborhood, the neighbors, the guns, but we have to face reality. Blanketing our neighborhoods in surveillance devices that promote a culture of suspicion makes all of us less safe. No, don't know about that, Chief. Yeah, not sure about that one. So the author continues on saying devices like Ring and the apps associated with them are made to keep us on constant alert. Dude, the thing is that I feel the opposite. The fact that I have the cameras, I feel like I don't have to be on constant alert. And we turn our alerts down. So it's a little bit less sensitive. So it's not like, you know, when our skeleton was blowing in the breeze, it was like blowing up our Ring notifications and stuff. You can turn that sensitivity down so you're not constantly bugged with notifications. But if an actual person does come to your front door, it's going to tell you, right? And I think that's the kind of thing that you want to know, right? But the author says these devices make watching one another constantly feel acceptable, expected, and even addicting. Yeah, okay, it is a little addicting. I do like watching my my doorbell news video streams on YouTube. But, you know, acceptable, expected, you know, it's my house. It's my private property. If you're walking around my house and my private property, you're walking onto my lawn, then you consent to being videotaped, mother trucker. I just don't think that this author is understanding the real threat of surveillance, which comes from the government. All darn government always got his hands in our pockets. Filthy hands in its pockets. All right, we got to go to commercial break. I can't wait to talk to Camilla Peterson about libertarians dropping out and endorsing Republicans. It's got so many people triggered. They're triggered. How dare you?
How dare you?
All that and more when we get back on the Wake Up America Show at wakeupamericashow.com. Good morning, Rise and Freedom. I'm Austin Peterson. You're watching and listening to the Wake Up America Show at wakeupamericashow.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. All right, lots more great show to go. Camelia Peterson going to be joining us here in just a moment. Libertarians, are they closer to Republicans or are they closer to Democrats? I'll tell you this. I sometimes listen to libertarians and they sound like Democrats. Annoys the hell out of me. It's like, I understand you're socially progressive, right? You're tolerant, have open minds. But I mean, for God's sakes, the Democrats tried to kill us all during this pandemic, mandate us out of existence. How could you ever vote for a Democrat after everything they did during the pandemic, even if you are for gay marriage or abortion or whatever, right? Libertarians, I think, probably are safer to align with Republicans than align with Democrats, at least. Well, one libertarian who was running for the U.S. Senate out in the state of Arizona decided, yeah, he agreed. And he dropped out. And he endorsed the Republican, Blake Masters. The Senate, it's a big race. It's too important. But that sure triggered the hell out of a lot of libertarians. Let's have a small-L libertarian. I don't know what she identifies with party-wise. I think I accidentally called her a libertarian Republican the other day. And apparently they were not happy with that in the chat. Camelia Peterson joining us right now on the line. Good morning, CJ.
Good morning. I don't know what I am either. I don't like to be boxed in. I guess I'm a little homeless.
Don't label me. Don't label me. Oh, good. I don't want labels. All right. Is it safe to say that you are at least, you know, philosophically a small libertarian then, Camelia?
For sure.
Okay. All right. So yes. Then what was your...
Does that also mean...
I think
does that also mean that a lot of times I align with Republicans? Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Good to know. So it looks like we've got a little bit of delay this morning, but we'll do our best. CJ, the Arizona situation has got a lot of fur ruffled online. A lot of libertarians very upset that the Libertarian Party candidate decided to drop out, endorse a Republican in that race. You know, he wants the Republicans. He doesn't want the Democrats to control the Senate. He probably wants to see Senator Rand Paul take the chair of that committee and start chopping off heads at the NIH. I mean, can you blame him?
No. You know, what's really interesting to me when I was reading a little bit about him, because I've been hearing the scuttle, but I'm not super familiar with him as far as what his stances are and such. But there was a comment in an article about him where he said that he did not even have either the local or the national party support for his run. He just did it. He didn't have any, you know, support from the party itself. So I guess I'm not sure why they care so much.
Yeah, bad optics for them, right? And, you know, you can see like the heads of the Libertarian Party being upset. But I think the most notable person being upset and the one that's worthy of discussion here the most is former Congressman Justin Amash. You know, he dropped out of the Republican Party. He dropped out of his race. He, kind of gave up his seat there. You know, it was widely understood that he might lose. But the fact remains, you know, you don't stand, you know, you stand and fight. Sometimes you got to fight losing battles. You know, as somebody who's been in a lot of these battles before, I'll tell you know, that there is value in staying and fighting some battles and losing on even terms. But Justin Amash was super triggered by this, right? You know, and what's funny is that, you know, in criticizing the Libertarian for dropping out, Justin Amash is arguing in favor of partisanship, which I don't like.
Right. And I think that, you know, he was saying he didn't have a lot of respect for people who were always, you know, they kind of come in as the token former Democrat or the token, you know, former Republican, and then they come in as a libertarian. But I think probably a lot of what irked him is that Ron Paul has endorsed Masters for one. Dave Smith, also, who is favored to run, you know, in 2024 as the LP, you know, candidate for president, he had him on his podcast and has really talked about Masters favorably. And so now Amash and Dave Smith are having this discussion about what is the purpose of the Libertarian Party at all, which is really interesting to me, because one of the things that when I really started seriously looking hard at the Libertarian Party, and full disclosure, I dabbled in the Libertarian Party, mm-hmm. even was elected to something or the other at one point. But I have since withdrawn all that because I'm kind of done with that. but the thing is that the big turnoff for me was that I kept hearing that the party was for like education and messaging. I'm like, no, parties are not to, you know, those are for, that's think tank, you know, that's a think tank job.
Right.
Parties are for winning elections. That is the sole purpose of a party. And so, you know, that the Mises Caucus faction in the Libertarian Party, supposedly that was their goal, was to win elections, not just go out there and message. So it's been really interesting to me that all of a sudden Dave Smith is kind of on this side of, well, you know, a party's job is both, you know, and Justin Amash is saying, no, a party's job is to win elections. So interesting times in the LP.
Yeah, interesting times in the LP. But I mean, you know, here's the thing. It kind of, you know, while it does confirm some stereotypes about libertarians, which I think are, you know, stereotypes for a reason, about them being, you know, Republicans who want to smoke weed or whatever, I think that's somewhat immaterial. But I think the material thing here is that this shows the power of the Libertarian Party and the power of the libertarian vote, in that, you know, in endorsing the Republican Party candidate there infuriates the Democrats. It sends them into conniptions, and it gives us a better chance of taking gains for liberty. I mean, because if anything, you know, country should come before party, right? And the principles should come before the party. But too often people are putting the party first and the principles second. You can understand why, because of how parties work and they have to try and maintain themselves and, you know, convince people they have to vote for their party every time. And that's just kind of like, you know, how parties work. But it does surprise me, and I know that this is kind of like shooting inside the tent ideologically here. It does surprise me to see the way that Justin Amash is reacting. I think because I'm more on the Dave Smith side of things. That is that, yeah, it's, they want to win elections, but also their message is to spread liberty. And it seems as if something's just wrong with Justin Amash, as if like he's just really kind of been, you know, we've talked about this before, Trump derangement syndrome. Like, he's still got that Trump derangement syndrome hanging on, and it's impacted everything that he's done. He's kind of like the Joe Walsh of libertarians in a way. Not maybe not quite that extreme, but it does sort of feel like that, you know?
It does feel like that. He has been flailing a bit ever since he left the Republican Party, and like trying to find, you know, where his purpose is in that, because I don't think he ever intended to really leave parties in terms of, you know, pushing that forward, but he decided that he couldn't handle anymore from the Republicans. And I understand that to a certain extent, but, you know, at the same time, there's not been a place. He did an exploratory run, you know, for president in the LP, and that was not going to go anywhere, unfortunately. But
isn't that the, so then just, if he did that exploratory run, place. Right. But I mean, here's the thing, like, you know, because he did that, it makes me think that, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe he's going to hate me forever because this gets out that I said this, but it seemed as if he thought that when he transitioned from Republican to Libertarian, that he was just kind of going to get handed the party on a silver platter, that everybody was just going to come along and say, oh, we're going to do whatever Justin Amash says because he was a member of Congress and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, you could understand why, because other people have literally done that. Congressman Bob Barr in 2008 and Gary Johnson, who was a Republican governor, Bill Weld, who was a Republican governor. I mean, the party does tend to hand itself over to former Republicans who come in and say, oh God, we need the attention. But there was something about Justin Amash that people didn't like as much as the other presidential candidates. They voted for Joe Jorgensen to be the presidential candidate. And, you know, Amash soon found himself embroiled in, I think he bit off more than he can chew. Would you agree?
Maybe so. I don't know. I will say that I kind of question just how much of a difference this Mark Victor, the libertarian in the Arizona race, I wonder how much of a difference it will make, his withdrawal at this late in the game, because a lot of libertarians are, first of all, well, there are libertarians who are unhappy that he withdrew regardless of the lack of, you know, local or party support. But at the same time, libertarians who are going to vote libertarian are probably going to go to the ballot box and they're going to vote for that libertarian party. They're going to check that off anyway, regardless of whether or not he withdrew, just on, you know, for philosophical reasons. So I just don't know if there's that many libertarians that are going to be like, this is the right thing to do. And then they're going to go and vote for Masters. I don't know. Maybe so. There was a Jewish Insider publication article that was before the primary that talked about Blake Masters' kind of journey from libertarianism to more of this, conservative populism. And so he talked about his influences being, Mises and Ron Paul and Rothbard. And he posted a picture of him and Ron Paul back in 2010 on Jekyll Island. And I have not heard the podcast that he did with Ron Paul, but Ron Paul endorsed him. And I think that's really interesting. And I kind of wonder why, because there are a lot of claims that, he's a neoconservative, and he makes all of these, inflammatory statements about, immigrants. And whereas, a while back, he used to be almost open borders. But right. I just don't know how much of a difference it will make. I will say that when I started reading, I was like, oh, my gosh, this is the guy. There was a debate. They had one debate and he was on stage during the debate, which I think is probably part of what gave him a good lift. And in that debate, completely unrelated to anything, when he was talking about the kind of things that we should be voting on because we're a constitutional republic, or things that we should not be voting on, the libertarian brought up age of consent in the middle of that. And I was like, why do they always have to
no,
go there?
No, no. Camelia, this is a good conversation. I'd like to continue this conversation. I want to talk to you about the midterms. Will you stick around during the commercial break so we can come back and talk a little bit about the midterms and talk about Eric Schmidt and what's happening here in Missouri and all that?
Sure, I can do that.
Okay, cool. We'll be back with more Camelia Peterson to talk about the midterms on the Wake Up America show at wakeupamericashow.com. Good morning, Rise and Freedom. It's Austin Peterson. You're watching and listening to the Wake Up America show at wakeupamericashow.com. Thankful to have you here. My guest, Camelia Peterson, she stuck with us through the commercial break. We're super grateful to have her here. Camelia, thank you so much for sticking around. Happy to have you.
No problem. Happy Good. Thursday, everybody.
Yeah, happy Thursday. All right. So just
how many more days? Like 4 more days till the election?
You must be so thankful, because I know you've been door knocking like crazy. Are you going to get a little break when this is all over after all this?
Yes.
good. Well, in Missouri, the big race is the Eric Schmidt race. It's Eric Schmidt versus Trudy Valentine. And I mean, needless to say, he's probably going to blow her out of the freaking water here, right?
Yeah, I think there's really no question about that. In fact, I've seen some articles written about how that really, she's almost in a way like, subtly, making verbal statements, kind of preparing for that option. And I mean, she bought this race, basically what it is, but it's, it was never going to happen. And she's just not a great candidate. Maybe if she was able to buy the race and be a great candidate, maybe she might have had a shot, although even then, I don't know. But one of the things that's really interesting is people have kind of talked a lot about, how that our U.S. Senate race, at least now that it's in the general, has really not garnered any national attention. And that probably the two most significant races in Missouri right now are that race with Eric Schmidt and then also the St. Louis County executive race.
Why is that?
Because, yeah. I mean, we all remember how bad Sam Page was during the pandemic. And he shut things down all over the place, shut restaurants, specifically restaurants, down for a long time. Our friend Neil, had to deal with that. He owns, steakhouses. And I went and the backlash to Sam Page was bipartisan. There were Democrats who had just had it with him. It was just, he is corrupt and he made terrible decisions for the county. And so I went to a debate watch party the other night with him and the person that is running against him. That's been a whole other story, but we won't get into that. But anyway, the person that's running against him now is a guy named Mr. Montavani, and he has run for the position before. Now, it's, you know, Republicans are backing him really 100%. And interestingly enough, you know, he's been a Democrat. He's been a Republican. He's really flipped back and forth. And socially, he is not conservative, but fiscally, he is conservative. And so he really has, you know, a more bipartisan broad appeal. And I don't know if he can pull it off. It's really close. But I'll never forget, you know, a couple of years ago, November, I think of 20, I was sitting with Neil in his house, and the restaurants had been shut down, or they were only allowed a very limited, like the tables had to be a certain way and all this kind of stuff. And they just didn't have, there wasn't enough work for their staff. And so there were too many staff, and they had to decide who was going to go home, and nobody wanted to just volunteer for it. So they Neil was literally putting names on a piece of paper, you know, and drawing a name out of a hat to decide, you know, who would have to go home. And that was just like, I mean, I wanted to cry. But eventually in that scenario, somebody finally stepped up and said, you know, I'll go home. But that's terrible. They should have never had to have done that. So, you know, the St. Louis County was one of the most, was probably the most locked down county in the state, because Parson let local control, you know, have its way. And so, you know, this, I think that's a really significant race, and it'll be close. I have no idea if Montavani could pull it off, but I sure hope so, because boy, I would love to fire Sam Page.
Oh man. Yeah, me too. If you're just tuning into the show, you can send us a text at 573-319-1586. That's 573-319-1586. Now, in regards to the midterm elections, we're looking at, you know, the Republicans potentially taking the House. People are saying it's going to be a red wave. I don't know about that one, Camelia. And the reason why I say that is because, you know, some top Republicans have come out in recent days and said, hey, you know, you need to be a little bit more careful about this rhetoric. A lot of these races are closer than you might think. I was reading the lieutenant governor of Texas was talking about how he and, you know, Governor Greg Abbott are in a lot tighter race than the polls would have you believe. So, I mean, you know, there's a lot of confidence on the Republican side, but that can backlash, can't it?
For sure. And just out, you know, so I'm doing a couple of races in the St. Louis County, St. Charles area. And when I am out knocking doors, people just assume that people think like they do. And they assume that their district is, you know, more conservative or whatever, when these are districts that are literally a 50-50 split. And so turnout is huge, you know, to make the difference for a candidate in a race like that. But, you know, there's, I don't know. So people can't afford to get comfortable, but I do think that they think they've got this edge, especially because it's midterms. And well, you know, the opposing party that's doesn't have the presidential seat, you know, they win in the midterm, right? That's a given. But yeah, I think we can't take it for granted. We've, you know, the Pennsylvania race that we've been watching with Oz and Fetterman, which has just been crazy and wild. People were really saying that Oz has taken the lead in that, but somebody listed a bunch of recent polls from different sources. And in some of them, Fetterman had the edge by 1 or 2 points. In others, it was a dead heat. In others, Oz maybe had one. So it's all within the margin of error, which blows my mind, honestly, after that debate the other night, because Fetterman just bombed. He is not physically fit for office of any kind. He needs to, like, he needs to go home and rest and recover. Yeah. So, but I mean, you know, so no, we cannot take that for granted.
Yeah, no kidding. If you're just tuning in to the Wake Up America show, we're speaking to Camelia Peterson, editor of the libertarianrepublic.com. So, CJ, what are you doing on election day?
Well, on election day, I will mostly be watching things. I mean, election day, you know, door knocking's pretty much done. And a lot of people are early voting because we can early vote in Missouri now. I've already voted. And so, even when I'm knocking doors now, people who are not necessarily absentee ballot voters are saying, I just went and voted today already. So I would imagine by the time we get to Tuesday, everybody is either on their way to the poll or they've already voted if they're voting. So, you know, and that evening we'll see who's doing watch parties and, you know, celebrate when our candidates win.
Yes, for sure.
And I will say, you know,
go ahead.
I know that there was that comment about, because last time somebody said something about you introducing me as a libertarian Republican. Uh-huh. And thank goodness, Missouri, we don't have to register for party in Missouri, because I don't really claim any party per se. But the reality is that most of the time, Republican candidates are going to align with my values. And I'm not one of those people who says that libertarians should run a candidate every time, everywhere, because there are a lot of really bad libertarian candidates. There's some bad Republican candidates too, to be honest.
Well, there's always bad Republican candidates, but there's always this kind of assumption among libertarians that, oh, just because they're a third party candidate, libertarian candidate, makes them they're good. Just like you said, like, you know, that candidate in Arizona, just bringing up the whole age of consent thing out of nowhere, probably not a good idea. But yeah, election day, I like to vote on election day. So that's what I'm going to do. So actually, I'm not going to let the cat out of the bag just yet, but I am going to let its tail poke out when I say that, that I have a big announcement to make on election day that I think our audience is really going to be excited about. So I'm going to get up that morning, do the show like normal, do my election day special in the morning. And then that afternoon, there will be a very big announcement to make for people who are big fans of the Wake Up America show. You definitely want to tune in, because Camellia might be a big part of that as well. And a lot of our friends getting together. So election day is a big day to be very excited for all friends of freedom and friends of the Wake Up America show. So you don't want to miss that. Camellia Peterson, thank you so much. And I guess I'll see you on Tuesday.
Can't wait.
Yeah. We'll have you on in the morning, that morning, right? On the show that morning, your regular Tuesday spot?
Yes.
Okay, good. And then I'll see you later that afternoon. Thanks, CJ. See you later.
Have a great Thursday.
Yeah, so excited. So many fun things happening. So much excite. I can't wait to share with you all the news. Oh, so happy. Oh my gosh. And it's actually, a lot of it is thanks to you and your support of the Wake Up America show. Coming up next, Tony Lovasco and I had a great conversation earlier. He's a Missouri State Representative, about the whole pandemic amnesty thing. And I got a lot of good feedback on it. So you know what? I'm going to share it with you when we get back on the Wake Up America show at wakeupamericashow.com. Good morning, Rise and Freedom. It's 8:53 on Thursday, and you're watching and listening to the Wake Up America show with Austin Peterson at wakeupamericashow.com. Now, Chris Morrill over in the live stream has piqued my interest, because he says that Tony was the subject of some kind of a nasty gram in today's Post-Dispatch. Chris, you better drop that friggin' link right now, bitch. I want to see it. Let's hear it. Come on. We want to see the hate mail for State Rep Tony Lovasco for show. I love Tony Lovasco, one of the best Republicans here in the state of Mo. Did you see Elon Musk trolling Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez on Twitter yesterday? Oh my God. Oh my Lord, my Lanta. You know how I know this has been a great show today? Because it has just flown by, because there's so much more that we could talk about. There's so much going on in the news, so much fun stuff. Midterms, libertarians freaking out, pandemic amnesty, Rand Paul might take over leading investigations and commissions on the pandemic response, and just so much fun. I'm in a great mood. And maybe it's because of, you know, exciting things that are happening, going on behind the scenes over here. That's definitely part of it. And, you know, in general, life is good, I have to say. So, thank you. But Twitter is just making me so happy these days. I'm saying, he said on Facebook and YouTube and Instagram, all that. Now, you know, I have an all of the above approach when it comes to social media, because, you know, you're watching us streaming on YouTube. Some of you might be on Facebook. Some of you might be on Twitch even, or Rumble, rumble.com. Where's my shout out? Let's get a shout out for my Rumble people this morning. Yeah. Good morning. Good morning. You're over on Rumble. Glad to have you over there. We are doing our best to build up our Rumble group. Makes you feel good to know that it is growing over there on Rumble at AP for Liberty. Feels good. Yeah, not that kind of feels good. Different kind of feels good, right? No, okay, yeah, it feels good like that. No, Elon Musk trolling Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is just... My soul, it's just... I'm refreshed. Elon maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He maketh me to drink from clean waters. He trolleth AOC and maketh my day complete. Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez tweeted, LMAO, at a billionaire earnestly trying to sell people on the idea that free speech is actually an $8 a month subscription plan. This is in response to news that Elon Musk will be charging people to have blue check mark verifieds. And, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez went on to tweet this. Elon Musk responded by saying, "Your feedback is appreciated. Now pay $8. Woo! Do we like it? Do we like it? Do we love it? Tell me now, how does it make you feel? I'll tell you, the Democrats on Thursday night, because you know, if it ain't happening on the first day, they'd be cheating. They'd be
oh, hell no, man. What the fuck, man? Get your ass on, man. Get your goddamn ass
on. How are we feeling today? Has it been a good show? Did you like it? Then I think you need to give it a like. The stream. If you're watching us on YouTube, especially if you're on Facebook or a Rumble, you need to give us a Rumble. We need that support. It's real simple. Like and subscribe. If you are on YouTube, turn on notifications. Do you know what that is? Have you ever heard of this concept before on YouTube where you like, you subscribe, you know, like the video that you're watching, subscribe to the channel, right? And then click the little bell notification icon on YouTube. Would you do that for me now, just as a personal favor to me? Costs you nothing, just turns on notifications whenever we're live or whenever I upload a new video, which I do. I've been cutting all these awesome interviews and clips. I'm gonna do that as soon as I get home today, and then I gotta get ready for Election Day on Tuesday. I will be here tomorrow, obviously, Friday, and then I'll be here Monday, and I'll do an election special show on Tuesday morning, and then I gotta get in the car and I gotta drive somewhere, and then I'm pretty sure that at the latest, you'll know the news by around 4 or 5 p.m., 4-ish Central, 4 Central time. Best way to find out that news, well, first of all, hit that subscribe and that bell icon on YouTube. There's a chance I might do some kind of a super secret squirrel live stream. You never know. But follow me on Twitter at AP4Liberty, because over on Twitter there is where you're going to be able to always see, you know, announcements, little quick hits, what I'm thinking, what I'm talking about. Yeah. I'm super excited about the future. I feel good. I don't want to go overconfident in the elections on Tuesday, but I think if that's going to be good, the news that you're going to hear is good. Elon Musk is trolling AOC. That's good. Oh, and you probably saw this over there if you're watching the show, not listening to it later on the podcast. See that right there? Right there? Do me a favor after the show. Go and check it out. We got an awesome new collection at the AP for Liberty shop right there. You're welcome for the great show, Quest. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. We appreciate all of our live followers who join us every morning. It's the Cantina Crew. They're very special. I'm going to get you some Cantina Crew merchandise. Head out. Check the shop. All right. Gotta go. Dang, I wish we could just stick around and play all day. Wouldn't that be fun? But I gots to go. Have a wonderful day. And we'll see you tomorrow on the Wake Up America Show at wakeupamericashow.com.